From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Gerard Nimira, chief executive of the tech company Shadow, responsible for Monday's disastrous app failure in Iowa, said, "We feel really terrible." He added in an understatement, "I'm really disappointed that some of our technology created an issue that made the caucus difficult." As more results from Monday's Iowa caucuses are rolled out days later, candidates Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders appear to be the top two winners, with Sanders garnering more votes and Buttigieg snagging more delegates. According to reports, the next caucus, to take place in Nevada, will now not be using the same app as Iowa. As New Hampshire's primary approaches next week, what has the fallout of Iowa been, and what does it bode for the coming elections? My guest is Stephen Rosenfeld, editor and chief correspondent and senior writing fellow for Voting Booth, which is a project of the Independent Media Institute. He spent the week reporting from Iowa. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Hi, glad to be here.
So, as I mentioned, I quoted the chief executive of Shadow, and he said, you know, he sort of, it seemed as though what he was saying sounded like an understatement, that some of our technology created an issue that made the caucus difficult. You were there. How chaotic was Monday night?
Well, it was chaotic on multiple levels. It wasn't so chaotic in the rooms where the actual caucusing was taking place, because that process itself is a person-to-person process. There's a paper backup that's created, and really that process is the same as it has ever been, which is a town meeting-like affair. What became chaotic was when the results, people expected the results to be reported, and you had a series of, let's say, concentric circles or ripples that just started, you know, spiraling outward. So in the actual caucus rooms, the caucus chairs were supposed to use an app provided by the Iowa Democratic Party, this shadow firm. And what they were supposed to do was enter four sets of figures, basically. The number of people there, who they voted for in the first round or first alignment, who they voted for in the second round or second alignment, and then the delegates that were awarded as a result of the whole thing. So what I saw happening was the caucus chair in the room where I was at, he could not get online with his app. He kept getting error messages, login error messages. So that means that something on the back end, from the headquarter part of this, was not working. The other thing that was happening was in some of these rooms, there wasn't enough bandwidth for people to just even try before you could even try to log in, because he had password troubles. And what happened there, and this is a little bit of digression, but not much, was that the campaigns, they also had apps that they couldn't necessarily use. So what I mean by that is the Bernie people, they have an app where they, after all their knocking on doors and canvassing, they have a list of people to come in and check them off as they come in to make sure that they're there. And if they weren't there, they were going to send them phone calls or texts and try to chase them down. Well, they couldn't get online in the precinct I was in because the airwaves were clogged. There wasn't enough bandwidth. And the same thing was true with the Warren campaign. They had a slightly different app where they had to basically report, like the guy who did it, their precinct captain, had to leave the room so we could get some signal. So basically, you have that happening in the room. Then you have what was basically the meltdown. So the meltdown really is where everything is supposed to be sent into a central location. And I walked through that central location earlier today. There were a couple rooms at the Iowa Convention Center hidden away from the media, a reporting filing center, that were basically rows of desks and computers with phones next to them, where people were going to receive either by app or by phone the information and then log it into a central tabulating system. Well, what happened there is not 100% clear. What they were saying was there were software glitches or there was coding errors, and there were partial results that and they could not all be reconciled. So what happened there was at a certain point, they weren't able to start issuing results. And that led to the chaos we saw on television. This wasn't chaos in the rooms where people had been voting and participating. It was on television where the national reporters and correspondents on CNN and all these other places, they were really pissed off. They had nothing to talk about because they didn't quite understand the process. They expected to be doing horse race coverage. And then they got angry, and then they got even angrier. And then when the state party didn't tell people what was going on, they did a terrible job saying, hey, wait a minute, we could actually, if we need to, do what they in fact are doing now, which is compiling the results based on the paper records that were created in the room. But they didn't come out and say that. They were classically tight-lipped and, you know, on full, their armor was up. So you have these layers of where things began to break down and compound. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, it sounds, we also hear afterwards that the app that was on which all of this hinged was not adequately tested, you know, so it wouldn't be surprising that there would be problems if you have problems, you know, also relying on bandwidth. When you have a state, parts of which are rural, you don't necessarily have good bandwidth or good internet access, and they're relying on an app to send over results. And then the phone lines are clogged. I understood that was another thing because people were then having to get on the phone. So the caucuses themselves are complicated, and then reporting the results to get the media the details that they need to make their coverage worthwhile, that is that was compounded by the app errors, right?
Right. So there's a couple things happening there. So let's break them down a little bit. So in what they were calling the boiler room, if you will, which I walked through earlier today, literally, because one of them was empty. And I was like, wow, I'm just going to walk in and take a look at the materials and see what they got here, which I did, by the way. So what they did was they had computer terminals and phones. And anybody who had complaints about the voting or the caucusing or bad behavior or technical problems was supposed to call into the same place. They had about 100 computer terminals and phones for what were supposed to be taking results by app and with people calling in from roughly 1,700 precincts. So when people when some people were not able to use the app, they would try to call in, and that's where you heard about these 60 and 90 minute waits. When people used the app and called in, they used the app and they got through. They then tried to call in to just double check and make sure that their results, so that compounded the waiting times because people were insecure that the electronics were working. So that was, you know, in their call center, help center, boiler room for compiling everything. The functionality of this tool, this software thing at the heart of this, is another matter. And what happened there, and I asked this is remarkable. They had a demo for the app on Friday, and I was the only U.S. reporter to go to it. There was only
the
one
Friday before the caucuses?
Friday before the caucuses. Mm. They had a demo. It was me and this woman from Japan. Nobody else showed up.
Wow.
So which lets you know a little bit about, you know, why they weren't able to say that much and they were freaking out so much and the network covered. So anyway, the thing about that is I asked Kevin Geiken, the party's executive director, what's your worst case scenario? And he scoffed and said, well, worst case scenario is we go back to the paper trail, and which are these summary sheets, and there's a series of individual preference cards filled up by all the voters. They get put into an envelope, and on top of that is a summary sheet. They were going to gather the summary sheets and bring them in and then just tally them, you know, by manual observation, which is what they're doing now. And he said that would take a day and a half, 2 days at most. Well, that's what they had to shift to. But I asked Kevin, I said, so when did you get this app out there? When did you get it done for people to start using? And he said 2.5 weeks ago. So this was last Friday.
Two and a half weeks before the Iowa caucuses, they got the app?
Yes, 2.5 weeks. So now here's why that's a very interesting figure. Yesterday, the Nevada party, which was using the same company's app, and actually they're trying to use it in a much more complicated way than the Nevada excuse me, than Iowa. They're trying to do way more complicated things with it. They said that they were not going to use it anymore.
Right.
They actually have secrets from this company.
Exactly. And that's the other state that does similar type of caucusing, but as
yes,
you said, actually
that's
complicated.
It's the third state. It's the first Western primary. It's the most multiracial, multi-ethnic. It's not a white primary state. Let's just put it that way. So they said yesterday that, well, we're not going to use that anymore, but I'm going to explore other options. Well, that they have less than 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Literally, they're going to have to use paper, which would be fine. But what it means is the media is going to have to learn to wait for results, like we're seeing in Iowa. But we can talk about it later. I just want to say is this app developer and the parties, they never got this thing done early enough to test it in real time and let other people try it and train to it. And that was fundamentally where things began to break
down. So to me, it sounds less the fault of the app developer, which of course we can talk about, and more the parties, the state level parties' fault. I mean, you don't roll out a brand new piece of software just a few weeks before a huge election on which so much rests. But there's also all of this information around what the company is, and its ties to establishment Democrats in the party.
Okay, so
they intercepted some reporting.
But I think that fundamentally what happens here is a little bit different. It's almost simpler. You know, it's both the party's fault and this software firm's fault, because this software firm is like many voting machine vendors that basically try to make themselves best friends with their clients, who are the state and local and county election officials. And they basically tell their clients, we can solve everything, trust us, we will do it. And then the election officials, in this case, the state party, as you know, they're giving you the PR, we are so confident everything will be fine line. And that's what we saw happening here, and it's still happening. Was still happening here, still is still happening in Nevada, by the way. So it's actually different, different disappointing behavior on both sides of that equation. Over the course of the summer and the fall, the state parties were pushed by the DNC Rules Committee to show them that there was going to be something that they could independently assess or test. And they never delivered anything. They never had. And we're talking about when they were thinking about a smartphone interface, which they decided not to use. But this is not one thing. They have to rent the whole system. And there are pieces of this system. There's registration, there's the actual, voting, ballot marking piece, there's the tabulation piece, there's the sending it in piece, there's the compiling piece. So those were not all the same vendors even. And they weren't showing or producing, products that could be put on the table and say, here it is, here's what we're going to do. And that pushed the DNC Rules Committee to say, okay, we're not going to do this smartphone interface where people were going to punch buttons on their phone to rank the candidates, because they, for a lot of reasons, they realized that was going to be a very bad idea. It was going to take too long, it was going to be insecure and all that sort of stuff. But this other piece, the reporting piece, working within the party, they said this: no one in the public will use these online tools, it will only be party officials. That's this app, and it was never done. So 2.5 weeks ago, the caucus chairs here got a chance to finally test it out. And by the way, it's the timelines are not much different in Nevada as far as what they get to test out and when they get to start trying it. So this is the problem.
So it's almost it would have been surprising if it had worked, from what you're describing to me. Stephen, I want to switch quickly, just in the interest of time, because as people, the most important thing is what the results are, and whether or not they came on Monday night or Tuesday or Wednesday or even Thursday, it's critically important to see how well candidates did. And I'm wondering if you can break it down, because the Iowa caucuses are so complicated that for the public,
yes,
for lay people, for even a journalist like me, it's hard to make sense of why Bernie Sanders won more actual votes, but either the same number or fewer numbers of delegates
Yes,
than
I can
Pete
explain that.
Buttigieg. Explain that.
I can explain that very simply. So it was no surprise to me that Bernie Sanders was going to get the popular vote, if you will. But that's not how they award or select their delegation to the national convention. The way it works is that they assign a certain number of delegates to each precinct, which is a geographic area. So if you think about it, though it's a little bit like the Electoral College in that some states have more votes and others have less votes, but it's not entirely based on population. It's more that they're trying to balance, you know, these populations in different geographic areas. So thousands of students will turn out, right? And then in some rural area, maybe 100 farmers will turn out. And so maybe the students will get, I'm making this up, you know, 20 delegates, and those farmers, you know, in that where there'll only maybe be 100 will get 7 or 10. So it's not one-to-one. So as a, what ends up happening is, on that first, they have, it's a two-round voting process. So on that first round, which is basically where you get the popular vote results, Bernie clearly had the majority of, the majority of popular votes. And if you were viable, which meant that you got more than 15% in your caucus, you were not allowed to move and realign with anybody else. So what happened was, those first round numbers, were the popular vote numbers for Bernie, were basically locked in. Those were first choice for Bernie. For Buttigieg, in a bunch of these, you know, caucuses, you know, he may have gotten more people who moved over because Biden didn't qualify. So the choice that I saw was, are they going to go for the Biden people? Are they going to go for Klobuchar? Or are they going to go for Buttigieg? And so his numbers.
So he was a lot of people's second choice, is what you're saying.
Yes, he was a lot of people's second choice, and so that's where you get this discrepancy. In the end, I think that Iowa, what ends up happening is the delegates awarded are delegate equivalents to what becomes a statewide convention, and it's based on congressional districts. In the end, the numbers of delegates between Bernie and Biden coming out, I mean, between Bernie and Buttigieg coming out of Iowa will probably be a tie. The difference might be one or two.
Right.
And it's more about the headline and momentum. And I think Iowa has 1% of the delegates needed to nominate. So it's not really statistically
It's
important.
Just that it's first out the gate rather than actually heavily weighted. So one of the issues that hasn't gotten much media coverage was that although turnout was expected to be huge, in the end it wasn't. It was less than, significantly less than 4 years ago?
Well, you would know better than I. I've been too buried in the weeds of this voting system stuff, but that's surprising. Where I was, it was a little bit higher. And I happened to be in a precinct in Des Moines that was fairly progressive. Bernie, out of the gate, was going to be the winner. And but I can't tell you. You know, I did go to this Biden rally. And boy, I got to tell you, people did not leave being very enthusiastic. So maybe that, you know, was a factor in some other places. I'm speculating. So
right. So far, the official turnout on Monday night was 172,000 compared to, I guess it would be in the last time. So maybe not 4 years ago, I suppose it would have been in 2008 when Iowa turned out in huge numbers for Senator Barack Obama. 240,000 people caucused in 2008, 172,000 caucused in, you know, this year, which is not too different. It's about similar to the numbers from 4 years ago. So finally, let's talk about what's happening next. We have the New Hampshire primary on Monday, or next week on Tuesday, where Senator Sanders is polling significantly ahead, I believe 7 points ahead of Biden. So your thoughts on that and on whether Buttigieg's showing in Iowa is an anomaly or suggestive that he might be trending?
I can't, you know, I could only guess about Buttigieg's fortunes going forward. This is really, really interesting. Bernie is going to win New Hampshire. He's from a neighboring state, and maybe, you know, it'll be people in the South will vote for Warren, but he won New Hampshire before. So, you know, New Englanders are loyal to New Englanders that way. And it'll be interesting to see if Biden can. It'll be interesting to see really what happens in Nevada, which is number three, and then South Carolina, which is a largely African American, you know, Democratic constituency. We'll see if they can rally for Biden. But the thing about Buttigieg is it looks like he is ascendant in the center, and as a candidate of the center,
So you
you know,
mean
little maybe.
competing with Biden, Klobuchar, and potentially
Yeah,
Bloomberg?
yeah, and Bloomberg. The thing is, when I went to this Biden rally, nobody was talking about Buttigieg. People who were there who were saying how they would never vote for Bernie, I spoke to a pastor. He was a Presbyterian pastor. He said his congregation includes people who would never vote for Bernie because they're all afraid of the taxes that would come to pay for all this stuff. So. And he was gung-ho on Biden as the only rational choice. Well, at the end of this rally, he said, "Oh my God, you know, can we talk about past as someone being past their prime?" I mean, the energy was, and I was listening to Biden talk, and it was very hard to hear him. And he rambles as much as Trump, and he's muffled. And I just can't imagine young people putting up with this or even trying to listen. And this guy and a lot of other people were saying, "Oh my God, let's look at, you know, what's up with Bloomberg? What's up with Bloomberg?" So no, these people were not thinking about Buttigieg. It's very hard for me to really, because this is all so episodic. These are little microcosms. It's hard to say. I think it's. I can't say any more than that.
So we have the New Hampshire primary next Tuesday, then you have Nevada coming up, then South Carolina, and then of course Super Tuesday. And we're going to be doing some live coverage on Super Tuesday when a huge number of states, including for the first time California, will be voting. Steve, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I hope this has been valuable for your audience.
Absolutely. My guest has been Steven Rosenfeld, editor, chief correspondent, and senior writing fellow for Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. He spent the week reporting from Iowa. We've been discussing the caucuses and their fallout. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.